This podcast is for people who are ready to heal body, mind, and spirit and are willing to take full responsibility for what that involves. I am not a doctor. I am not a therapist. This podcast contains adult language and themes that are not suitable for young children or those who are easily offended or triggered. The views discussed in this podcast are my own, based on personal experience and of those I have known and worked with for my entire adult life. This show is not meant to take the place of sound medical or mental health advice. You, and only you, are responsible for the choices you make based on the information you hear on this show. Welcome to the Alchemy of Natural Healing. I'm your host, Laurel Dewey. True healing is an alchemical process, meaning it must transform you on all levels, body, mind, and spirit. What affects one affects all three. True healing is one of the hardest journeys you'll ever travel, but it's one of the most rewarding and fulfilling when you get to meet yourself for the first time. If you're ready to take that journey, let's get started. Welcome to episode 12. Today's topic is the facade. In February of 2020, before the world shut down, I attended an energy medicine symposium, and I was asked if I'd be open to putting together a short 20-minute talk that would be scheduled in between the main speakers. I agreed and asked them what they wanted me to talk about. Talk about anything you want, I was told. Well, okay, I thought. I was still doing a lot of transformational healing work on myself at that time, and I'd become fascinated by the subject of the facade, as I had consciously been focused on breaking that down within me, because you can't heal if you are presenting a false front to the world and to yourself, of course. There's no way to be honest with yourself and your healer or your therapist if you can't release the fake veneer that you've been carrying around forever. Getting real means dissolving that counterfeit image you've been projecting to the world and who really isn't you. The facade is the personality projection you adopted and adapted to because either it was the only way to survive or because someone else kept telling you that you have to do it because nobody would like the real you or nobody would understand you. And that's just two examples. There's a lot of reasons for the facade being engaged in an individual. When I say that alchemical transformation is getting to meet yourself for the first time, that person you get to meet is the real essence of you that lives behind the facade. It's the you without the trauma informing your personality. It's the you without the fear of being judged by family, friends, partners, coworkers, etc. It's the you that doesn't give a shit anymore about whether you're liked or not. It's the you that finally fits inside your skin. And to uncover all that, you have to drop the facade. So, getting back to my talk I was asked to do, I chose to talk about the false front that energy healers and all types of healers have to deal with and have to attempt to get around if they are going to be able to help their client. For example, if a client has a facade that is all about pretending to be happy all the time, the therapist has a huge job in getting their client to release all that fake happiness so they can get to the root of the pain they are hiding and holding on to. And if you didn't know that fake happiness is actually a sign of hiding tremendous pain, wait until I wade deeper into this subject. I figured since I was talking to an audience of card-carrying healers, energy healers, Reiki masters, naturopathic doctors, body workers, dowsers, and more, that this subject would intrigue them and maybe give them a new perspective and a way to help their clients. But just because you have the best of intentions, it doesn't mean it won't backfire on you, and did it ever. I admit it, I was terribly naive back then. I had not yet gone through some of the toughest years of my own healing. And because I was so entrenched in transformational work, I was very narrowly focused, and that created a huge blind spot. So I show up at the symposium and spent the first day talking to people there and getting a feel for the crowd. And then it was my time to do my 20-minute talk. I dove right in. I gave examples of what the false front or facade looks like and how deceptive it is to those who can't see through it. At the 8-minute mark, I was just getting started when one of the moderators walked up to me and thanked me for my time and informed me that I was done. Well, I wasn't done, of course, but I looked at the audience and noticed how distracted they all seemed, how tense they appeared. This was all very odd to me, but I thanked them and walked back to my seat. When I sat down, a woman who I knew came up to me, and I whispered to her, "What's going on here?" And she said, without hesitating, "You just unmasked most of the people in this room, and nobody here can risk that." I thought my abbreviated 8-minute talk was informative, not exposing, but that was how much I still didn't know back then. Needless to say, I didn't make any friends during my time there, but it wasn't a bad experience. It was a good lesson. And that lesson was that the facade is something that is damn near sacred to many people, and to point your finger at it or pull back the veil on it is tantamount to committing a type of treason that shines a little too much light on the fakery going on beneath the surface of too many people, including those who call themselves healers and therapists and Reiki masters. Just what I said right there is going to inflame a lot of people who are listening to this. And I learned that if you're going to talk about the facade, you better have one foot in the stirrup and a very fast horse. The more someone's facade or false front is held up with steel rods, the more that individual is going to fight tooth and nail to get you to shut up. But now I have my own podcast, and I will talk a lot longer than 8 minutes on this subject. So this episode is about you looking to be brave and dropping your false self, your fake front, your false projection into this world. Because if you are a regular listener of my show, I have to assume that you are open-minded and willing to hear and consider things that make you think and make you look in the mirror and do the work that is required to heal body, mind, and spirit. If you are carrying a thick facade, the weight of that has great bearing on how far you can heal whatever mental, physical, emotional burdens you have, because all those burdens are wrapped up in the burrito of that facade. If you have to play a role with your family, your friends, your partner, your children, your community, and on, the energy it takes to play that role is a massive drain on you, and it's a drain that won't allow total healing. The tighter the weave of the false cloak you wear to cover your true self, the less you can see the path forward toward total healing. It is flat out exhausting to pretend to be someone you are not, or to always be on, or always be cheerful, to constantly pretend you are okay when you are dying inside. When there's this constant conflict going on within you, a subconscious tension builds over time, and your body will absorb that. It's an unease at first, and that leads to a dis-ease, and that eventually leads to disease. It may take years, it may take decades, but suppressing your true self, whatever that may be, and leading with your false self eventually leads to everything from chronic digestive disorders to stomach problems to chronic tension headaches. You know, TMJ is a common effect. All that daily tension and tightening of the jaw over the years and grinding your teeth and stiffening your neck when you have to pretend to have your shit together when all you really want to do is fall into a soft bed and cry. The facade is the mask you wear to hide the parts of you that you believe are unacceptable or shameful. For example, if you were raised in a very restrictive religious family, where your personality was molded from birth to project what was termed a godly countenance or what was pleasing to God, you may have happily gone along with this because you absolutely wanted to be loved both by God and your family. You didn't want to be ostracized, shunned, or made to feel separate. But your personality may have had nothing to do with being pleasing to God. It was possibly more what was pleasing and acceptable to your parents and how they needed you to be seen and loved and accepted by the groups of people who were part of their inner circle. And dare I say that most of the people in that inner circle were all projecting to one point or another their own facades. It may have been one big fake projection, which happens all the time. All of this starts in childhood and is cemented into your psyche. Some of us are strong because we had no choice but to portray strength. I said portray, not be strong, portray strength. Because if we didn't portray strength, the chaos would have swallowed us up and torn us apart limb by limb. This was part of my facade. So we grew a very thick skin and a sarcastic, biting tongue, even though our true nature was to be quiet and pulled back and really wanted nothing more than to allow people who we trusted, who we believed were far more capable and genuinely strong, to make the big decisions. But since there was nobody in our orbit who fit that description, we had to step up and fill the shoes that did not fit us, but that we were forced to walk in. Gentleness was not a trait that was conducive to our ultimate survival within our immediate environment. So we played the role that was required of us simply to survive. And as we grew older, we forgot that wasn't our true nature. We projected our false front into the world, and the world responded with more need for us to grow an even thicker skin and drum up more caustic wit that belied what we really wanted but didn't consciously know we needed because we were so used to playing the role. And then when it all falls apart and your world crashes into a million pieces, you have a hell of a decision to make. You have to tap into that false toughness at first to get through the hard parts and find your path forward, because nobody is going to come to save you. You've known that your whole life. So in your weakened state of unraveling, you still have to step forward and pretend that you are capable of doing something you've never done before and somehow crawl through the darkest hole imaginable until you find the light again. And while you are cradled in that darkness, you will remember who you really are. And you will have to break apart that fake, thick skin, and you will have to stop using sarcasm as a cover for your pain. And you will need to lay yourself bare and succumb to your true nature of receptivity and quiet reflection and agree that the toughness was a necessary evil and that it kept you moving forward and out of danger, but that now, if you truly want to heal, you must come back to your true self and find a way to inhabit that state of being without being destroyed by it. Take it from me, that's not easy. You know, to risk gentleness when your facade of toughness is so fully embodied, sometimes it takes removing yourself from a job that forces you to be tough. Sometimes it means walking away from family or long-term friendships that were founded on your false pretense of being tough. They don't know or maybe want to know your gentle side. Maybe they see that as a liability. And if they do, it speaks much more to their unhealed nature and need to maintain their facade. Here's another example. Let's say a girl grows up as an only child with a dominating father who treats her more like a son. He has a successful business, and he wants her to one day take it over. So he imbues in her a desire for ambition and being a cutthroat. Her true nature, however, is much more feminine, but she's not allowed to inhabit any of that, ever. She must adopt this diametrically opposed facade of manliness and aggressiveness in order to obtain love from him. She never wears a dress or a skirt, only pants and jackets that have no hint of femininity. So as she gets into her 20s, she looks around at other women who show their feminine nature, and she judges it. She looks down on them actually quite harshly. But something begins to break in her when she's in her late 40s. She's unmarried, no children, and in charge of a business that is, yes, very successful. And if she had a dollar for every man who told her she was the ballsiest bitch in the room, she'd have thousands of dollars. But she's broken inside. She's dangerously lonely. She drinks too much scotch. And one day, it all catches up with her, and she falls apart in her bedroom closet, surrounded by all her practical manly attire. In that moment, her facade cracks, and all she really wants is for someone to take care of her, because she can't support the false front any longer. It takes a lot of bravery on her part. But she ventures into a clothing store and buys a couple fancy feminine shirts, because she can't directly go to the skirt or the dress yet. And as she stares at herself in the dressing room mirror, she sees herself for the first time, and she likes what she sees. This type of facade for a woman takes a long time to break down and rebuild into her true nature, especially when it's all she's known since she was a child. She has to stop equating femininity with weakness. She has to deal with the sense that she's betraying her father's guidance and his confidence in her to run his business. But she's also reached a point where her staggering loneliness is killing her. She wants love. She wants someone to take care of her. She never wanted to be in charge or be considered the ballsiest bitch in the room. All she wants is the comfort she has never been given by a man who wanted a son and thought that turning his daughter into his protege was a good idea. I'll break down another example of how the facade is built from the ground up. Grow up in an environment where one or both parents repeats every single day to you and your siblings that appearances are all that matter. Live a life where you are required to create daily illusions for the outside world, friends, and family to consume as truth. Lie constantly about how amazing your life is. Never pay attention to how conflicted you feel inside. Ignore that constant discomfort in your gut. Listen to your parents always talk about how wonderful everyone is doing, even though what you are witnessing with your own eyes is completely the opposite. Have your reality continually distorted by the need to put on a false front until you begin to question your own reality, your own experience, your own eyes, and wonder if what you are seeing and feeling is even real. That dad isn't an alcoholic or drug addict, that mom really isn't addicted to pills, that sister really doesn't have an eating disorder, that brother isn't really sexting with online predators. Distort reality to such a degree that everyone outside of your carefully crafted home life believes the fantasy stories of how happy or blessed you are. Have your parents post hundreds of photos on social media to back up the manufactured happiness, and make sure you title them One Big Happy Family or Family Matters. Make sure everyone in the photo is dressed perfectly, with big smiles and curving their hands into a heart shape, because it'll probably get lots of likes on social media. Because attention from strangers you'll never meet is what really floats your family boat. More than anything, the image of perfection must be maintained. Thus, if you're a girl, your weight is always focused on, and perhaps you are told to always stay 10 pounds underweight because, you know, the camera puts on 10. If you're a boy, you have to be involved in some sort of sport, and you have to excel at it, even if you have no interest in that sport. And if one of your siblings revolts and doesn't want to play the facade game anymore, make sure the message is heard loud and clear that if we have to create a unified or a united front. Have you heard that one before? A unified front is a unified facade. But eventually, all of that crashes because a facade is only as strong as the people who are willing to prop it up. So when daughter is taken to the ER one night because she passed out from dehydration from starving herself, Mom steps into high gear and downplays the entire event. She's fine. She's amazing. She's on an IV drip, but she's great. And if people dare to question why daughter continues to look sick and why brother looks loaded all the time, that's mom and dad's cue to become completely unhinged, that someone would ever notice the obvious, and then they drop that person as a family friend forever because they are getting a little too close to blowing up that carefully constructed camouflage of reality. When husband or wife moves out and their absence is seen, lie. Just lie. Tell everyone they are visiting friends out of state or working on a project. If you grew up in a house like this, the gaslighting of your experience is the definition of a mindfuck. The compartmentalization of your false reality takes a lot of energy to maintain. It becomes completely exhausting. And as you get older, if you are still maintaining this insane performance, there's a good chance that something goes haywire in your health. But if you have been programmed to believe that illness is not what you want to project to others, you are going to really fight the reality of your situation. But the illness doesn't care. It will continue to attack you because it's trying to get your attention. It's there to wake you up. But if your family is hell-bent on maintaining that facade, even in the wake of your own obvious illness, you never feel like you can be honest with anyone because there's still a part of you that doesn't want to let your family down. And when I say let them down, I mean you have been trained from birth to maintain so much bullshit that to extinguish that bullshit by speaking the truth would most likely create a catastrophic domino effect throughout your family of origin. And that's part of your internal fight that laid the groundwork for whatever illness you are dealing with. So you're not just trying to get well, you're trying to get well undercover. And you cannot heal with that secret of energy. Guarded energy is constricted energy. And constricted energy is very resistant energy. And that is not the energy that allows for flow and free expression of how you really feel and how angry you really are. You know, one day you wake up and you have your first come to Jesus moment. Maybe it's when you get away from your family and have time to decompress and witness other families or other people who are not driven by their facade. Maybe it's watching a video online or reading an article about narcissistic abuse and you feel as if you're reading your own life story. Understand that once you recognize the facade within yourself and begin to break it down and heal it until it no longer exists as your operating system, you will begin to see it everywhere around you. You'll see it online big time. Facebook should be renamed Facade Book. Lots of shiny, happy people who are quietly dying inside. For me, I began to see the same manufactured personality traits in others that I used to have, and I had a lot of compassion for what I witnessed, because I know the energy it requires to maintain that fakeness, and I know how it drains a person. All those unhealed souls who are still clinging to their false projections because they are either unaware of what they're doing or they are deeply ashamed of their true nature and terrified that someone will expose them. You know, the good girl who has a dark past, the tough cage fighter who is absolutely terrified inside and fighting his demons more than anyone in the cage. The youth pastor you trust to teach your children the word of God, but who is secretly a pedophile. The uber-masculine, muscular Hollywood heartthrob who's photographed with beautiful women and called a womanizer, but who is in fact gay and is terrified that if they were revealed, his entire career and reputation would be destroyed. Show me a famous comedian, and I'll show you someone desperately trying to laugh off their extreme pain. Read autobiographies of famous comedians, and you'll get a perspective on why they want to make people laugh. Often it's because they took care of a family member who was sick, and they found if they made them laugh, they could temporarily take away their discomfort. And that was power to them. So they perfected their shtick so that it hit the mark each and every time. And they got better and better and better at it until they perfected that facade. Because if they were yucking it up all the time, they didn't have to feel their own deep pain. I've often said that I think comedians make powerful, nuanced, dramatic actors. They are very subtle in dramatic roles, but if you pay attention, their acting is often achingly real because they are bravely exposing a broken part of themselves that hides beneath their facade of humor. Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting comes to mind. People who worked with him had the same observations, and that is that the manic, outlandishly comical side that everyone loved was a complete facade. They all said that his true nature was very pulled back, very quiet, often somber, and harbored what was most likely a tremendous amount of internal pain. When someone is constantly on all the time, that's a big red flag. Any overreaching or overextension of the false personality is suspect. Those who become aggressive or over the top with explaining themselves when they think people are edging a little too close to their true self, me doth think you protest too much, comes to mind. Projecting a lot of false virtue is another huge facade sign. How much rage stands behind all that virtue? How much vengeance is there? How much cowardliness? How much suicidal ideation? I've known far too many fake virtuous people who are hiding a lot of what they see as a darkness within them, in them that isn't necessarily that dark or terrible. But to them, because of how they were raised or the culture they belong to, they believe they must suppress it and project this over-the-top virtue. That type of virtue is so loud and abrasive. That type of fake piety often comes across as so arrogant and cocky. You know, true devotion to God is peaceful and quiet, whereas false virtuousness boldly shows up the front door with loudspeakers and seeks attention. There is a hyper-quality that is constantly showing others their virtue. And I said showing because someone who truly has high morals or high integrity is quiet about it. And they're not doing it because they are covering up a past they feel disgusted by. They will not blast their morals and integrity onto others. They won't blast it into social media. And most importantly, they will not judge you for anything you do that doesn't meet their belief system. They are simply people who have chosen to live a certain honest life, but are not shoving it down your throat. The extent of the hyper energy they project of virtuousness is equal to what they are trying to cover up. In other words, those who project a facade of extreme virtue are often hiding what they internalize as a pretty dark secret that they would be terrified of others knowing about. Perhaps they're covering up a shady history of drug abuse and sexual promiscuity with a fervent love of God that is all-encompassing, and then taking it to the next level and openly judging others who do drugs or who are sexually promiscuous with declarations of "you're going to hell" or blanket statements like "she's such a whore and a druggie." I've encountered far too many people in my life who latch on to their religion to cover up what they see as a life that is not right or perfect, and they want to pretend it didn't happen. What they don't realize is that they are more powerful in delivering a message of redemption through whatever faith they have, followed by being honest about where they came from, where they came from. Their own story of a former life of drugs and sex is a testament to how finding faith helped pull them out of that life, and their story could potentially help others who are in the same boat. You know, show me a pastor, a priest, a rabbi, a leader in a New Age group who exhibits a wild-eyed, rabid delivery of their message and who judges his congregation or followers harshly with a steely fist of condemnation. And I will show you someone who is projecting the greatest false front and who could become extremely dangerous if that facade is exposed. These are the types of people I mentioned at the top of the show who carry the potential for either destroying others who expose them or turning that destruction on themselves and taking themselves out. I experienced this exact scenario with a minister I knew growing up who was out of control from the pulpit. He'd call people out in the congregation during his sermons, and it always had to do with accusing them of being greedy or selfish. A few years later, it was discovered that he was stealing a lot of money from the church coffers to live a life with his wife and two children that was beyond extravagant. When he was finally called out by the church council to explain all of this, he maintained his innocence, even when absolute proof was shown to him. Shortly after that, he decided the best way forward was to hang himself in a closet in his gorgeous home, and he made sure that either his wife or one of his young children would find him. So, unfortunately, I speak from experience with this tragedy. So when you start doing work on your own facade and breaking it down, as I said, you will really easily see it in others. However, your job is not to tell other people about their facade. Facade busting, as I call it, of other people is dangerous business. You want to bust through your own facade so you can heal? I'm all about that. But if you seek to expose the facade of another person who carries that facade, because it's life or death for them, you need to be aware of the consequences of that unveiling. The stronger their need to maintain that facade, the stronger and darker their shadow self can be. And that shadow self will turn on you if it becomes exposed. You know, people go to great lengths in order to maintain and keep generating their facade at the expense of everyone. You were abused and you want to expose your abuser who presents him or herself as a virtuous pillar of the community and who everybody loves because they cannot see behind that facade. God be with you and keep your head on a swivel. Because the powerful energy that has been built and cultivated for decades in that person to present high virtuousness to the world is equal to the malevolent behavior they are capable of in order to keep their darkness a secret. I think it's very important to note that there are people on this earth who have carefully crafted their false projection because underneath it all, they are skilled narcissists with borderline psychopathic or sociopathic personality disorders. And their facade is more of a fully fleshed out secondary personality that could possibly be so well developed and working for them that to expose the true personality buried behind that mask would be akin to ripping off a bandage in the scab to reveal the soft, vulnerable wound underneath. But their wound has teeth and venom. These people who fall into the category of narcissistic sociopaths or psychopaths have a lot to lose if they are uncovered, and you should never screw with someone like that because they will often turn on you viciously and maniacally, and at the worst, your life could be on the line. That's how strongly some people in this world will protect their facade. Now, while busting through your own facade doesn't require you to explore what's known as shadow work, understanding your shadow is certainly part of alchemical transformation. Alchemical transformation requires a death of whatever doesn't belong to you, and it also requires a radical rebirth into the person your soul meant you to become before you buried yourself behind the facade. I touched on shadow work in last week's show, and I'll go into it a little bit more in this episode, only because it does have bearing for some of you listening who have perhaps seriously suppressed a lot of your true nature because of shame, guilt, often a feeling that God will hate you, and a host of other reasons. You can't ignore the hidden parts of your personality and expect to fully heal. You may need to uncover darker aspects of your personality. And that doesn't mean that you're a psychotic, murdering freak. It can mean that you are maybe not the saint you portray, but that doesn't mean you're a disgusting creature. You know, the polarity of a saint does not have to be a demon. There are many shades to the dark side of people, and they aren't all raging maniacs. Yes, okay, some are, but for the most part, they are just parts of you that you keep hidden out of embarrassment or the need to fit in with your family, society, your community, whatever demands behaviors and aspects of your personality that don't resonate with you or who you really are. The word persona is interchangeable with the word facade. Persona is Latin for mask. Carl Jung, who I've mentioned multiple times, wrote that we create a persona that we project onto others in order to be accepted by the people in our own world and outwardly in society. I found this quote in an article about the persona and Jung's take on it. Quote, "The persona is designed on one hand to make a definite impression upon others, and on the other hand, to conceal the true nature of the individual. However, in the projection of this false self, one often has to suppress their own shadow or dark side," unquote. And again, let's get away from this idea that the dark side is always treacherous or evil. As I mentioned last week, your shadow is often what you judge in others that you find distasteful or wrong or whatever judgmental word you want to use. So look at that for starters. Make a list of what you judge as traits or behaviors that you really, truly are viscerously disgusted or obsessed by. Then take a hard look at that list and see how many of those judgments were formed during your childhood development. Then be honest and question how many of those traits you secretly harbor. Delving into your family dynamics, which you would most likely do with a therapist who is trained in exploring shadow work with you, is typically the starting point for understanding where a lot of your judgments and suppressions began. You could be asked questions such as, what behavioral traits were allowed in your home growing up and what traits were highly discouraged? What were you told was good behavior and what was bad behavior? What behavior was punished and what was rewarded? And how did you adapt your behavior to avoid punishment and seek only rewards? Because that right there is where the suppression begins. Then the questions may migrate into what makes you irrationally upset? And the operative word is irrationally, not just a little bit upset, like over the top upset. I want to stress that not all shadow work is trauma-based. Not everyone experienced childhood trauma. I would venture to say, though, that there are more people who have had childhood trauma than have not had it. But they're the lucky ones who escaped that experience in this lifetime. However, even without hardcore trauma, there can still be unsettling or uncomfortable memories that forced you, for whatever reason, to suppress aspects of your personality that really need to be expressed in a healthy, mature way. If you were told when you were a child, for example, that your talkative nature made you unlovable to the family or the outside world, you might have curbed or completely shut down your own voice. So that part of you who needs to communicate gets repressed, and you shut yourself down all the time and project a facade of someone who is quiet. But if it's your built-in nature to be talkative, you know, maybe you're a Gemini like I am, you're going to have a very hard time suppressing that part of you. So it's going to bubble up within you, and every time you're told to shut up or be quiet, you'll become more and more frustrated and maybe start acting out in some way. But then you do shadow work and rediscover this loquacious part of you and decide it's not bad at all, but it needs to be disciplined and honed so you're not just blabbering but saying things that people are interested in hearing. That could lead you into many different possibilities. Maybe you'd excel in sales where you had to talk and think on your feet. Maybe take classes in public speaking or start a podcast. So the twist is that if you find success with your talkative nature, suddenly you realize you're not unlovable and that what you were told growing up was simply someone else's opinion. A very common one is sexual repression, especially if you come from a family or a culture where generationally there are members of the family who have been taught that sexuality is dirty or only for procreation, or doesn't allow you to follow a dedicated spiritual path. Sexual repression or fear of intimacy, whether it's heterosexual or homosexual, is a common shadow that people explore. Perhaps you are a heterosexual woman who was lectured growing up by all the women in your family that sex was painful, disgusting, or an obligation that was a burden. And you bought into that as you grew up, and you did whatever you could to avoid men, even good men. So as far as you're concerned, you're not a sexual person. Maybe you think you are asexual, and that is the facade that you project. But then your worst nightmare happens. You fall in love, and suddenly you're in great conflict because you want intimacy, but you are terrified of what that requires of you on all levels. But then you do make love, and you discover, to your shock, that you enjoy it. Uh-oh. And you realize that you have suppressed a basic need within yourself that you were told was dirty or disgusting. But that's not how you feel. In fact, you discovered that you have a very strong sexual drive, and that flat out shocks you. Where did all this come from? Well, it built up from suppression. So in a case like this, you had a strong sexual side to you that was hidden in your shadow and was crying out to be expressed and experienced, hopefully in a mutually healthy relationship. And once you can express it, you are able to integrate that into your personality. Over time, it certainly can mellow, but it never disappears, and you don't judge the fact that you are a sexual being and enjoy intimacy. So once again, your shadow doesn't have to be this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde metaphor. In the example I just gave you, the woman may have carried the facade of a spinster or poured her suppressed sexual energy into some type of all-encompassing service work that takes up all of her time and doesn't allow for a personal life. Or she could become extremely religious and wear the facade of the overly righteous woman. The possibilities are endless as to how that suppressed sexual energy is expressed in her outer world. But the point is that when she breaks through the conflict within herself and potentially ignites her sexuality, her entire reality shifts. And with that shift, all the judgments she made prior to that shift dissolve. And if you really wanted to take this shift to an extreme, she might become a sex therapist for other women who are terrified of intimacy. That would be a full circle alchemical transformation to go from fearing her own sexuality to teaching other women how to explore their struggles with sexuality. The thing about understanding your own shadow and how it relates to the false self or facade is that once you acknowledge your own suppressed nature, you will be more perceptive to the hidden aspects in others. But it's not because you are judging them. It's more of an awareness that you have. And that awareness opens you up to an understanding you never had before. That right there is transformative. Now, I want to mention a common reaction that happens once you release your facade, and that is the decision to do some deep digging on those who raised you and theoretically explore their suppressions and speculate on who they truly were underneath their facades in an attempt to understand the entire family dynamic. I strongly advise against this approach, mainly because you're not going to get your answers. You start digging around and asking questions of people who are unwilling to divulge their past to you or talk about their suppressed traits. You are going to get tremendous pushback, and it's never going to end well. You will often encounter a lot of anger, a lot of judgment, and gin up a lot of anxiety that serves no real purpose for your healing. If you start insinuating that someone who might be held in high regard within your family is not the angel or the person that they present themselves to be, you are going to be shut down. You will be seen as an instigator of chaos. And that's not what you need to heal. I attempted to do just this, not with a family member, but with a close family friend who I felt had information that would be useful to me because I'm a natural researcher and digger, so to speak. In my case, I was asking about someone who had died years ago and was simply curious as to what they may have told this friend. I was told, who is going to benefit from this information? And I said, well, I will. I want deeper context. And I was told in no uncertain terms that nothing would be revealed and I would just have to let it go. And I did let it go. And I understand now what this individual meant. Because basically you get to a point where it is what it is, and it was what it was. And a lot of people choose to remember others as they presented themselves to them. They don't care whether someone had a facade or not. They are not interested in exploring anything past that false front. And to that point, it is useless and a waste of your time to try to force or convince other people to explore their facade if they are not interested in doing so, or definitely if they feel threatened by the idea. Your healing work is your healing work, and you cannot foist your experiences onto others and try to get them to do what you're doing. There are many people who have walls of resistance that are so intensely fortified with thick, fibrous, interwoven tentacles that they will never be able to dissolve any of it. If the person's childhood trauma has created a false, concrete identity, their wall is an impenetrable force field. They cannot face the monster that terrifies them. And they don't realize that the monster they fear is themselves. But more to the point, they don't care. They just don't care. So let them be and bless them on their way as you continue your own journey of self-discovery and transformational healing. That's all for this week. Thank you for choosing to listen to this show. If you like what you hear, share this podcast with others and follow me. Check out the notes for this episode where you'll see the links to find me on Instagram and X at Laurel Dewey or The Alchemy of Natural Healing. Looking forward to you joining me here next week when I talk about how waking up is an ugly shock. New episodes drop every Saturday. Until then, remember that awareness is a demanding mistress. Once she wakes you up, she won't let you go back to sleep.